This is Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Welcome back. Thanks so much for spending some time with us on the show today. We've been chatting about the protests across Canada that have been taking place at hospitals. In Toronto, a larger crowd gathered. And this is what it sounded like earlier today on Hospital Row. Take a listen.
Where's the pandemic? Where is it?
If there was a real pandemic, we wouldn't be arguing about it if it was real or not real. We'd all be dying.
There's no pandemic.
So on the one hand, you have people standing there saying, this isn't a real pandemic. We don't want vaccine certificates. And then there was a small group of healthcare workers, people that worked in those hospitals, standing there in scrubs, masks on, that were holding signs and were there to make a point and to stand up for the work that they've been doing in the hospitals and to say that they are in favor of vaccine certificates or vaccine passports, whatever you want to call them. I said at the start of the show today, I think this is a really disheartening moment, and I'm going to stand by that. I mean, this is a real slap in the face to healthcare workers that day in and day out have been going in and doing their jobs in a pandemic. It is just wrong. Hospitals are places where people go in the lowest moments of their lives. People have life-altering events there. They're rushed to emergency, into surgery. People are getting treated for cancer. Take the protests somewhere else. And we've seen statements coming out from officials, Mayor Jim Watson, Mayor John Tory in Toronto. We did have a gathering of people outside today, the Ottawa Hospital, but apparently it was quite small. So it was nothing like what we were just hearing in Toronto. It was a locally smaller demonstration. But joining us right now, I have Dr. Adam Kassam, the president of the Ontario Medical Association. Thank you for coming on the show.
Good to be with you.
What do you make of that scene that we were just playing in Toronto?
Well, it is certainly disheartening to have, at the 18-month mark now of this pandemic, demonstrations outside of hospitals that far and away have been places where people who have, as you have were describing, in some of the most low moments of their lives receive care. And, you know, over the past several weeks, we have seen a slow escalation of intimidation, of threats, of bullying, of harassment of healthcare workers and patients getting in and out of hospital. I think, as you're describing, it is very disheartening for a lot of those healthcare providers on the front lines. And if there is an axe to grind, it certainly can be done in a peaceful way in front of Queen's Park or in front of a legislature where there is ample grounds to protest. But in front of hospitals, in my opinion, is not the right place.
Do you think that we're doing enough right now to protect the patients and healthcare workers that are trying to make it into the building?
Well, I think that right now we are seeing, or at least I remember seeing two, I think it was might have been a week ago, where there was a hospital that couldn't have access to it by an ambulance. There was an ambulance that was trying to get through a crowd. It wasn't able to. Lights and sirens were going. And I worried about the patient that was inside that ambulance. Maybe they were having a stroke or cardiac arrest or some sort of significant life-altering illness that they needed care for. And so I think we desperately want to have safe zones around hospitals so that, as you're describing, not only healthcare workers, but their patients can access care uninterrupted.
What would the safe zone do? Describe to me how you think that should work.
Well, I think there's perhaps a perimeter that can be established around a hospital or a healthcare setting, an organization or an institution, where people who decide to demonstrate, and listen, we live in a democracy. I value the right for freedom of expression. But when that impacts on an ability of another person to get care, to access care in some of the most timely ways that we would like, that is a different conversation entirely. And so perhaps if this begins to escalate even further, I'm thankful, for example, that the Ottawa protest was not of a large scale. But if in the event that it does become larger or grows to a larger size, that we do have safe perimeters whereby not only emergency vehicles can access the hospital in a timely way, but of course the healthcare workers, patients, and their families can also do so without abuse.
What about healthcare workers themselves wanting to demonstrate at their place of work? Would that be permitted? Should that be permitted in your view?
I think that the demonstrations that you're seeing by healthcare providers is in response to, not de novo new protests that are happening by the healthcare workers. Let's be honest. Healthcare workers have a pretty tough job to do right now. They are busy. I'm a physician. I work on the front lines as well. And we don't have time to waste We really want to take care of the people of Ontario. And so I would say that if there wasn't a protest to begin with, you wouldn't have a counter-protest crowd. And I think that that's sort of very well established.
But what I'm referring to is on other issues like compensation or working conditions. If healthcare workers have concerns about that, and then they want to exercise their democratic right to talk about their working conditions or the conditions of their employment, like let's say nurses in the GTA, should they be permitted to protest at the hospital?
Well, I think that there have been in the past demonstrations by healthcare providers at Queen's Park in large capacities, I think. And I think there has never been instances, and to my knowledge, I might be wrong on this, but to my knowledge, there have never been instances where access to hospitals, which is the chief concern here, the concern is access to hospitals as well as abuse of healthcare workers. I don't ever remember protests by healthcare workers for any number of reasons where it impacted on patient care in that way, in that specific way. And so, again, there are areas and avenues to do this in a democracy like ours. We value that democracy. We value freedom of speech and expression. And there are places like the front lawn of Queen's Park where that can be done.
I guess what I wonder, when I heard earlier today Liberal leader Justin Trudeau saying, we will do this if we are reelected to form government. We will make it a criminal offense to block buildings that provide health care. I thought, okay, that's good. Healthcare workers do need to be protected. But then I thought, well, we already have this. We already have a criminal offense to threaten and intimidate people. Do you think we should be enforcing that more?
Well, you know, that's for the police and law authorities and law enforcement to decide. I trust their judgment on areas where they are experts. And so, to my knowledge, if that is an infrastructure and an example where those types of things already exist in terms of enforcement, then certainly they should be enforced in ways that protect those healthcare workers.
Dr. Kasem, before I let you go, obviously, this is a blow to morale. This is very difficult for healthcare workers that are coming into work and then they're confronted by this, or even if they're just seeing it on the news and they're thinking, great, I'm going to go to work today and do my job. And there's people yelling at doctors and nurses outside hospitals in Canada. That's not a great feeling to have. How much does it impact the mental health of the men and women that are going into work?
Well, we've had an issue with burnout in our profession for years, if not decades. And, you know, at the 18-month mark now of this pandemic, we are still in the midst of a fourth wave. You know, this thing ain't over yet. We're hoping that we're maybe in the eighth or ninth inning of this ball game, and we really need as many people to be fully vaccinated as possible. The people that are in hospital now as a result of COVID are those who are predominantly unvaccinated. We're seeing this here and in other jurisdictions across Canada and around the world. And so the morale, I know, has been a challenge for our frontline healthcare workers, doctors and nurses and others. And so I think collectively we need to come together as society. I also want to make the point that these groups represent the vast, vast minority of people. And I think healthcare providers and workers know that this does not represent Canadians or Ontarians, and that we're going to continue to do our job, which is to take care of people, to take care of our communities, our loved ones, our friends, our neighbors, and ultimately try and get through this pandemic together.
Dr. Kasem, thanks so much.
My pleasure.
Dr. Adam Kasem, president of the Ontario Medical Association. And I do want to come back to our city today, because there was a very small demonstration outside the Civic Hospital campus. But this has been causing stress for frontline healthcare workers that have seen this happen in other parts of the country, like Alicia Robley. She's been on our show before. She's an ICU nurse at the Ottawa Hospital. She spoke with our show today about how she's been feeling watching these protests.
Honestly, I'm really disappointed and a little bit angry. I feel as though these demonstrators are taking their protests to the wrong place. Healthcare workers have had a very stressful time throughout this pandemic, and it's just insulting that these protesters are going to come and protest outside of our workplace. It feels truthfully like a targeted attack at what we're trying to do, which is just to, you know, care for our patients and do what we can to keep the community safe.
She wasn't working today, but says the situation has been causing a lot of anxiety for her and for the people that she works with.
I have to say that part of me has been tempted to drive by and to see the protest myself, because I truly can't believe that they're doing this in front of the hospital. And there's even part of me that considered going there in counter protest. But again, I would worry for my safety in that if I was to do that.
She also says she's concerned the group leading the demonstrations might be misrepresenting healthcare workers.
The protests are run by a group that call themselves Canadian Frontline Nurses. And I just feel that this small group of people are not representative of most Canadian nurses. And so it worries me that the public and that patients might think that, a group who calls themselves Canadian Frontline Nurses might be representative of the people that work in this hospital. And for the most part, they're not. It's a very small group of people. And again, I just think that protesting in front of the hospital is the wrong way to go about getting the message across.
Those two nurses, by the way, are both under investigation by the College of Nurses of Ontario for their conduct. Back to Alicia Robley, who's an ICU nurse locally. We asked her, what would you say to any of these protesters in Canada if you had a chance to speak with them?
I would ask these protesters to take their message somewhere else. The nurses, the doctors, the healthcare workers at hospitals are not the people making these policies. We are working really hard to do our job, to keep people safe, to care for people who are sick. And we have had enough stress. We don't need to deal with anti-vaccine protesters. So I would ask them just to be respectful of the hospital, the people that work there and the people that have to go there as patients. And if they want to protest, take their protest somewhere else. You know, go to where the legislators are that actually have made these policies.
Alicia Robley, an ICU nurse at the Ottawa Hospital. 419, News Talk 580 CFRA. And again, I do want to stress, it really didn't seem like there was much of a crowd outside the Ottawa Hospital today. But just the fact that people are thinking about this and hearing that these are being organized, and it's on the minds of people that are going into work at the hospital, is unacceptable.
You're listening to Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Welcome back. We're going to bring on the Ottawa Humane Society now, because PAW monthly donations and one-time gifts made to help animals in the care of the OHS are going to be tripled until Wednesday, September the 15th. Stephen Smith joins us now, Manager of Communications at the OHS. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me on, Christy.
So tell our listeners how this works.
Sure thing. So the Day of Giving is an annual event at the OHS where donors can have their donations to Ottawa's animals tripled. And as you had already mentioned, best of all, when you become a PAW monthly donor, your monthly gift will be triple matched for an entire year. And this is all thanks to our generous anonymous donors and sponsors.
So they're going to be matching donations up to $80,000 as part of this campaign. Tell us where the money actually goes, how it's used.
Sure thing. So the money goes towards making life-saving differences for Ottawa's animals. So it goes towards medical care, daily care, helping animals find their forever homes. So it really makes a huge difference for Ottawa's most vulnerable animals.
Recently, I know that you had the sad story of a one-year-old tabby cat, Gulliver, who was found shot. Tell our listeners about that.
Yes, that's Gulliver. And as you mentioned, he was a one-year-old orange tabby cat, and he was found shot and left for dead and rushed to the OHS. And now Gulliver had a really long journey to recovery. He had to undergo extensive surgery, and our donors came through for him in an incredible way. And now, after his long road to recovery, thanks to our donors, he's now with his forever family.
It's so painful to hear about animals being mistreated by that, by that token. It's also important, I think, as a reminder that even, during COVID, there are still animals coming in. Maybe people haven't heard about it as much because we've heard about all these great stories of people adopting dogs and getting pets for the first time. But the OHS still has sad stories like this coming in.
Yes, of course. We have lots of animals coming in who need life-saving care. And another such animal that maybe some folks have heard of is Jake. And he was a dog who was found wandering rural roads of Dunrobbing, dragging a chain that had been embedded in his neck. And thanks to our supporters, Jake had received that life-saving care that he needed, and he's also now his forever family.
Well, thanks so much for coming on the show and telling us about this. Appreciate it, Stephen.
Sure thing. And if anyone wants to donate, they can visit ottawahumane.ca or call 613-801-8544.
Stephen Smith, Manager of Communications at the Ottawa Humane Society, joining us here on the show. 427, I'm going to admit right now, Chris, I spend way too much time going to the Ottawa Humane Society website and looking at all those cute little cats and dogs and then telling myself, no, you cannot get another dog. You cannot adopt another animal or rehome another animal. That's that. 427 on Ottawa Now. We've got a lot of discussion and debate coming up in a moment. We will bring on our Monday political heat panel, Cam Holstrom, Kate Harrison, and Lindsay Maskell, in the final push to convince voters. With a week to go until Election Day, things started getting pretty spicy this morning. And Erin O'Toole switched it up. You know, during that debate, the one thing that I heard from a lot of listeners, and a lot of you liked it, was you were saying, yeah, maybe he wasn't in it as much. It wasn't, you know, claws out. He wasn't ripping into Trudeau, perhaps as strongly as some of you would have liked. But what I heard from you over and over again was that he was polite. He was respectful. And a lot of you really liked that. Today, there was a definite shift in tone. And we heard some pretty strong language from him today. Did you like it? Do you like when politics gets a bit more brazen? And in this case, it was more of an attack. It really was. He was painting Justin Trudeau as an elite, silver spoon in hand. He said, well, he was doing that. I was growing up in the suburbs. My neighbors were auto workers. My dad worked for General Motors. I'm the hardworking guy. He's the elite. Going after him, attacking his character. I wonder what you thought about that. We'll ask our political heat panel coming up next.
You're listening to Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Welcome back. 437. It is the final push in this federal election campaign. Go time, if you will. Leaders are spread out across the country. Campaign literature is being handed out. Door knockers are going door to door looking to charm or convince you to vote for their party. And there's been a definite shift in tone today, I would say, from Conservative leader Erin O'Toole. He really slammed Liberal leader Justin Trudeau today, going after him for his leadership, yes, and his unnecessary election, yes, and we've heard that all before. And that's basically what the debate was. That was right out of the gates. Everybody was going after Trudeau. Why are we even having this election? A question I've heard many of you ask. But we heard something a little bit different, I think. Some stronger language, a hardened tone. Take a listen.
When Mr. Trudeau was partying, and we've all seen the photos, I was doing search and rescue missions in the military. Every Canadian has met a Justin Trudeau in their lives. Privileged, entitled, and always looking out for number one. He was looking out for number one when he called this expensive and unnecessary election in the middle of a pandemic. A $600 million power grab.
So he's really setting up the contrast here. I'm Erin O'Toole. I'm the average guy like you. That's Justin Trudeau. He's the out-of-touch elite. But what did you think of those comments? And I'm getting a lot of people texting in. This texter, no name, reminder to sign your name, says, I think Erin O'Toole painted an accurate picture of our current prime minister. I liked it. Another person says, no, I don't like it. I do not like personal attacks at all. To me, it shows desperation and a lack of confidence in your own policies. That's Cynthia from Barrhaven. Let's find out what our political heat panel thinks.
Now, political heat on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Lindsay Maskell is here, political consultant. Cam Holstrom, consultant at Blue Sky Strategy Group. And Kate Harrison, vice chair at Summa Strategies. Hello, everyone. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday.
Hello, hello.
All right, Cam, let's start with you today. What did you think of that comment?
You know what? If I took it as totally out of context, never having heard a conservative comment on the prime minister before, I'd say fair game. You know what? Mr. O'Toole has a record of service in the military, and we thank him for that. And you know what? Mr. Trudeau has his record, too. And the comment that maybe Mr. O'Toole said that kind of rang true to me was,
we all know someone in our lives like Mr. Trudeau. And you know what? That's true. Because, you know what? He did it during the debate just the other night when he was when he was basically trying to say that Jagmeet Singh pointing to his Mr. Trudeau's failed record on Indigenous issues was actually causing damage to reconciliation because he was being cynical. You know what? As an Indigenous person, that to me felt like that privileged guy. That's what I saw. So I could see it. But I will say this. It's not, none of that is happening in a vacuum. The fact of the matter is we've had going on, what, 9 years or 8 years or so of the Conservatives going after Trudeau, going after his looks, going after his profession, all of that, that have always rubbed me the wrong way because I've always thought that was a pretty low level of politics. So to me, does he make a correct point? Yeah. Is he the great messenger to make the point? He's not the perfect messenger in this case, that's for sure.
Kate, what do you think?
Well, I think we're seeing the change in tone happen because this is a very, very close race. And there's an expression that contrast wins campaigns. I think that certainly O'Toole is trying to create that contrast between himself and Justin Trudeau because a lot of voters recognize that there is a big credibility gap in terms of what Justin Trudeau preaches and what he actually delivers. To Cam's point, reconciliation and Indigenous issues would be on that list for sure. I also think, though, that this is being responsive to what conservatives are hearing at the door, which is this issue that everybody thought would go away 3 or 4 days into the campaign about why we were having a campaign at all. It keeps coming up again and again and again and again. So I think that by continuing to remind voters of why we are here and whose choice that was, because it was only one person's choice, it was Justin Trudeau's, that shows that he is being responsive and listening to what voters have to say. Yes, there needs to be a balance. They've spent the last 3 weeks putting out their proactive policy. This hasn't been a gang up on Trudeau as the only thing conservatives are putting in the window. But I do think we are seeing the attempt here to frame the ballot box question as being one on trust and leadership.
Naturally, politics can get ugly and full of, well, politics, Lindsay. But does this go beyond that? Was this too personal?
Well, I think it does speak to what we, you know, something that Aaron O'Toole has been able to do is hide a little bit about what he's really about. And today we're seeing a bit more of his true colors and the colors of the people around him in terms of this decision, because you're going to see a big difference when you look at the rally last night that Trudeau had and that kind of momentum of the bump he's had in the polls recently, and you see that momentum message coming out versus something so negative. And, you know, the other thing that I find really interesting is, you know, the ballot question is no longer about whether or why we're having an election. People are voting today as the last day in advance polls. They're going to the polls a week from now. And the choice between them is which one of these two people are going to be prime minister. So that can be talked about through the whole election, but that's not the decision facing Canadians on Monday, next Monday. I think it's highly personal, but at the same time, you know, it just kind of, it's not, you know, we know that this happens. We would expect it. There is nothing wrong with Mr. O'Toole talking about his military service. But, you know, people have also been through a pandemic. They received vaccinations. So many businesses received support. I think it's a bit of a mistake in terms of how aggressive it was, but that's his card to play. And I really do think there's an interesting thing, especially with older voters who feel a bit more of an attachment to Justin Trudeau as kind of Canada's son because of his father, and that kind of negativity isn't something they're looking for in a prime minister right now. So, you know, it was an interesting card to play. We'll see how it plays out for them. But, you know, this issue of why we're having an election isn't the question people are asking themselves when they have to actually cast their vote.
You know, there's nothing like at a really busy time in your life, like, for example, when there's a federal election campaign going on, like adding another new pressing book to your to-read book list and to try and read it cover to cover urgently when you're trying to cover a federal election and we're in the thick of it. And I'm, of course, referring to Jody Wilson-Raybould and this book, this scathing new book where it's her tell-all, her recounting her time in the prime minister's government and telling her side of the story, the full untold story of what happened. And in this new book, it's called Indian in the Cabinet, She describes the early days, then how things deteriorate, and then how she says they increasingly tried to control what she did and that she was pressed to lie. And Trudeau, over the weekend, was denying that he never, ever told her that she had to lie. Let's take a listen to the clip of Trudeau saying that.
I did not want her to lie. I would never do that. I would never ask her that. That is simply not true.
But she says that's what she felt. That is her side of the story. So, Cam, I'll go back to you. Are you into reading this book? How much do you think this changes the course of the final days of the election campaign?
Well, I'll start with the second question first. I think it re-raises the whole issue of the prime minister and his ethics or lack thereof and his personality. And you know what? I think that's a fair question to be asking when we talk about why we're in this campaign and what it means to have his kind of leadership running the country. I'll just point out that when it comes to the book itself, and I do look forward to reading it, I would note that while Mr. Trudeau says, I didn't do that, that didn't happen. He didn't lawyer up and hire someone to stop the publisher from publishing this book. He's not suing Julie Wilson-Raybould for having written what she wrote. And I don't know about you, but if I had someone, a former cabinet member of mine, going public, trying to basically say that I'm a liar, that I'm deceitful, that I'm all of these things, that I basically are the opposite of who I portray myself to be, I would be, and making money off it in the process, I would sue the pants off them. Yet, for some reason, the prime minister is just like, no, it's not true. It's not true, and kind of pushing it off. You know what? I'm sorry. If that's not true, I would expect him to be going to the walls to try to actually stop from coming out, which makes me wonder. There's obviously some truth there. Otherwise, the publisher wouldn't publish it. Otherwise, you would not see this out there. So let's be real here. When I have to look at who I trust on this, who I know their background of, and I don't know either individual in this case, I look at Jody Wilson-Raybould and her record of leadership and her record of work in the past, knowing her reputation in the Indigenous community, I take her at her word. I absolutely do. Because there's so much in that story that rings true of what we've seen from this prime minister in other examples, and that's the other side. Jody's not alone. There are plenty of other examples out there of similar behavior or similar activity, always seemingly directed towards women or towards Indigenous peoples. And anyway, you know what? All I got to say is this. If he says he didn't do it, I'm surprised he isn't suing.
448, the question is, will it sway the vote? Lindsay, what do you think about the excerpts of the book and the timing of this book?
Well, first of all, Jody herself at committee under oath said the prime minister did not ask her to lie. So I think that's an important thing to remember. So if I was the prime minister, I would not be lawyering up because she herself under oath said the prime minister did not ask her to lie. And the book says something different. The other thing is, if we remember back to this case about her recording so many conversations with people, that's interesting that she, you know, for that approach, which is very bizarre behavior, that there is nothing on record of that nature. So I think the timing is to sell books, obviously. You know, she has a message she wants to put out, and that is the timing she selected because it makes sense for sales of her book, as I'm sure lots of people are quickly in war rooms trying to read and take it in. But I think what her message was at committee, again, under oath as an elected official, is the contrast to what is in the book, and something that is important for Canadians to know that what she said at committee is really key there, is that she was not pressured to lie by the prime minister.
Okay, so I want to actually read the excerpt here because, oh, go ahead, Lindsay, go ahead.
No, I was saying it's not a book I'm going to be picking up before now on election day, but I'm sure lots of people will be, and that was selective on her timing, I'm sure.
Here is the part that was printed in the Globe and Mail. Okay, I want to read this so our listeners have it in case they didn't hear about it over the weekend, which I'm sure they did, but just as a refresher. She's talking about a meeting that she had with Trudeau in 2019, and she says she could feel the pressure mounting. Things were shifting. She said, I remember seeing it. I remember feeling it. I had seen and felt this before on a few occasions when he would get frustrated and angry, but this was different. He became strident and disputed everything I had said. He made it clear that everyone in his office was telling the truth and that I, by extension, Jessica Prince, my chief of staff, and others were not. He told me I had not experienced what I did. In that moment, I knew he wanted me to lie, to attest that what had occurred had not occurred. Kate?
Yeah, the reason why this has something to it is because we have seen Justin Trudeau behave like this before. And to Cam's point, this is not the first time that it's happened. He had similar behavior towards Shane Philpott, he's out of cabinet, out of government. Selena Caesar-Chavan has made similar claims in her book. So this in isolation, Christie, is not going to move votes. But what it does do is contribute to a narrative and contribute to that credibility gap that the Prime Minister has when he talks about being a champion of feminism and talks about championing women. And then we have all of these little cases sprinkled around about how he doesn't listen to them and how he's quite dismissive of them. And you don't even need to look further back than the debate that just happened last Thursday when Annamie Paul, the only woman on that stage, was answering a question about sexual assault and sexual harassment in the military. Yeah. And Justin Trudeau, rather than take that moment to recognize the severity and the importance of that, said to Annamie Paul, made a quip about her not being able to manage her own caucus. To me, that's Justin Trudeau's true colors on full display. I think Jody Wilson-Raybould's book is giving a lot of voice to what many people have seen Justin Trudeau to actually be.
Lindsay, you want to jump in on that one? What was your take on that remark?
So, I mean, this is not, if there are, for the number of women that are running for office again, and the number of women in the cabinet, and a woman deputy prime minister who stands shoulder to shoulder with the prime minister and feel that he's been a wonderful colleague. I mean, politics is to be a team sport, but it also has a lot of quarterbacks. So brush ups are going to happen. Disagreements are going to happen. No party has been immune to that. But I actually think that, this is in a very different era of speaking up, having your voice, but it's also not, I don't always think that some of this serves people well in the next parts of their career, but I'm happy to have them have their say because there's also so many people who have had a wonderful experience working within this government, getting to do wonderful public service. And voters will get to have their say on that on Monday.
Okay, very quickly, in the last 2 minutes, I'm going to go around here, and I want you to tell me what you think the candidates need to be doing, what they need to be working on in this final stretch. Cam?
Get to the doors, get the voters out. That's all it is at this point. It's all about turnout. It's all about making sure that people get out there, because I think that's going to be the biggest challenge of this campaign. With COVID, I'm going to be very curious to see how many people turned out at the advance polls on the weekend. You know, Elections Canada originally estimated they were going to see between 4 to 5 million mail-in ballot requests. I think we barely got to 750,000. I think that might be a high number in my recollection. So either people were waiting to vote or people weren't going to vote, in which case means you've got to get those people out there and got to get them to the polls. And that's going to be difficult, especially in some communities where, frankly, there aren't as many polling stations as there have been in the past. And it's going to make it harder to convince people to stand in line around lots of people to actually go in and take part of their franchise. So that's it. At the end of the day, it's get out that vote.
Kate?
Yeah, the key for the Conservatives right now is to not get thrown off message. Make sure that you are continuing to appeal to the majority of voters that you need on side. In this case, I think we've seen in the last couple of days, the Conservatives had decided that particular voter group are young families, with the two announcements that were made around support for families that have suffered the loss of a child or a miscarriage, advancing the Canada Child Benefit to expectant parents. To me, that says that they are trying to make sure that those middle voters are feeling comfortable with putting parking their vote with the Conservatives this time around. So keep it positive and forward looking and try not to get distracted by the mudslinging that's going to be coming their way.
Lindsay, in the final stretch here, what is the focus?
Well, definitely keeping forward on the positive momentum that has been happening and being shown in the polls, but most importantly, getting that message to voters at the doors that this is about the decision of who do they want to have lead us through the next phase of this pandemic
and our recovery from this. So that is the decision in front of them, and that is the question that they're going to be wanting to remind people that they're taking into the ballot box as their decision. So it'll be an interesting week.
Cam, Kate, Lindsay, thank you so much. Take care.
Take care, guys.
Cam Holstrom, consultant at Blue Sky Strategy Group, Kate Harrison, vice chair at Summa Strategies, and Lindsay Maskell, political consultant.